And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 198.
198.
Yes, creeping up there.
Getting up there.
I'm Zaz Sonnenstein.
I'm Samantha Ron.
And this is the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably.
Probably.
Today is a special episode. It's actually a one-on-one interview I had with George Tremontanus. Tremontanus. I had to say it a lot. George Tremontanus. Seattle
Tremontanus.
Filmmaker. Shot in Seattle. It was actually interview with him about his new film. It's out this week on video on demand everywhere. It's called Win a Trip to Browntown. And he makes it clear in the episode, as his wife wants to make it clear, this is not about her. It in no way is real or a true story at all. It has nothing whatsoever to do with her. Okay? Please remember that. She would like everyone to know that. So
I love that. I love that she said that.
Yeah. It's it's a fun little film. I saw it. It's shot in Seattle. No shots at the Space Needle. That was one of his his rules he wanted to try was to make a Seattle movie that didn't show the Space Needle, which I thought was kind of funny.
Well, because all Seattleites always go to the Space Needle all the time.
And you always have a view from it from every single apartment you have, even if you're in Bellevue, right? Mm-hmm. It's a one trip to Round Town. Okay, family dreams, one cheeky bet. here's what it's about. Frank Tsagas is a middle-aged family man and struggling novelist who can only see his life's shortcomings. On their 21st anniversary, his soft-spoken wife, Laura, surprises him with an offer. If he can lose 50 pounds in 3 months, she will give him a unique sexual adventure. As he struggles to lose the weight, Frank learns that the paths chosen in his life's journey are more important than its final destination. So he wrote, directed, and produced it. He played Frank in it because he told me he had trouble finding an actor that was willing to do the 3 pounds. Despite the name of it,
the 50 pounds, right?
Huh?
Did you say the 50 pounds?
Yeah. Despite the name of it, it actually doesn't have any graphic sex scenes in it or anything.
Yeah.
There's, some suggestions. There's a lot of puns in it, some bad language, but there's no shots or anything. Nobody had to do nudity or anything for this film.
Right.
His three children are actually, or his two children are in the film. Real life children play his kids in there. It's a local, I love to support Seattle filmmakers as they're doing stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was getting hit up by their publicist, and I didn't even know for a while. She didn't mention it was a Seattle filmmaker.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I don't know about this title. Get in trouble here. Then I found out, hey, Seattle filmmaker, got to support them. And so they sent me a link and I watched it and I enjoyed it, had fun with it. And he suggests in it that, it's a good movie for a lot of couples to watch together and can create some interesting conversations. So about boundaries and what would motivate you. So,
yeah.
Samantha, we should do a whole episode about motivation, I think.
Yes, we should talk
about too many things.
Unless if we do, we might talk about too many things.
Other things. Yeah.
Just don't get too cheeky.
Don't get too cheeky. Yeah. This movie, it could be, I heard making the movie was kind of a pain in the ass, but my God. Too many puns. And the email I got was just said, what would motivate you to lose 50 pounds in 3 months? Honestly, at this point as a parent, I don't even think it's that. That wouldn't even, I don't know. If you told me I could sleep, like have naps all the time, like every day, that would motivate me to lose 50 pounds.
50? I don't think, at this point, no, it's too much weight for me. I should not lose 50 pounds.
Oh, well, you can't, but yeah.
Yeah, but I also just honestly, I have to say, like, gaining all of that weight being pregnant. And then I know some of it was like hormones and stuff like this, but like not being able to feeling like I was gaining too much weight too fast. It wasn't just like regular pregnancy weight. I felt like I gained too much too fast. I was retaining a lot of water or something. I don't know. But it really gave me a lot of like, oh my gosh, is this like how people struggle so much when they're trying to lose weight? I wasn't trying to lose weight when I was pregnant. Right. I'm just to be clear. Okay. it was just, I was seeing like how the feeling it was to not feel in charge of my body in a way that like, it just seemed like, man, like trying to lose 50 pounds or something, that would be really trying to lose weight would be, I think that I'm just like, bravo to people who like do it and stick to it.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Hopefully bravo to me. I will tell you.
Yeah, bravo to you, Silas.
I will say, watching the movie and when he gets on the scale and he's like at my weight, and I'm like, I'm the before picture? Is that what I am right now? I'm the before? The guy who needs to lose weight. It's like, yeah, this guy needs to lose weight. Hey, that's my weight. Screw you, people. Fine. Go to the gym.
They have like, when you were mentioning the before picture, one of the Facebook ads that I keep seeing is for Stitch Fix. Is that it? Some ad with clothing.
Yes,
and
I do that.
Normally, oh, cool. Okay, yeah. Like normally, was your sweater from Stitch Fix?
Actually, it is.
Wow.
The shirt is from Stitch Fix. The sweater is from Stitch Fix.
Yeah, you have been dressing better. I noticed that last time when we were doing the podcast. Yeah, because you had started doing
about a year and you're now.
Close, yeah, yeah. Nice. Well done. Well done, Silas.
I want to reorder because I've now they've spent like $2,000 on clothes over the last year, getting sizes that fit me right. Now I want to have wasted all that money by losing weight and having to get new ones. That's what I want to do.
That's good. Yeah.
That's my goal is to have wasted a lot of money.
But I had a
Stitch
phrase
Fix,
that just
Stitch
yes oh and normally the normally you know I see the outfits they put the people in and this and that and it's cute and everything, but like there was this one ad where they put the woman, she was in something, and then they showed the after picture you know as they're giving her the different outfit pieces, and it was horrible. It was horrible. And somebody wrote, and I was looking at the comments, and somebody commented, she looks like the before picture. And when you said before picture, that's what, and it's so true. I laughed so hard that it completely did. I'm like, how did this ad get okayed? How did that ad get okayed? It looked like she went to the thrift store without knowing how to thrift.
Oh God. That's hilarious. That is hilarious. I love that.
If I see it next time I'm on Facebook, I will. I'll take a screenshot or something. Send it to you. Yeah.
That is
bless her heart.
We should.
And you know, like how sad for that model or actor too. You get you're all excited to get your ad, and oh yeah, it's going to be great. I'm getting this great outfit, and then
and then people are ripping on you in the comments. You're like, hey man, I was just getting paid for this.
What? Right? Yeah, at least they got paid.
Yeah. We hope it was union.
Yeah.
So anyhow, hey, that's this episode. So yeah, Samantha's not on that because I interviewed him in the middle of the day when only I'm available. But it's still a fun interview. So you know, listen to him, support him, check out the movie. Want to give a big shout out to our Patreon listeners, our Patreon supporters, especially our Inner Circle members, Tara Widener, Stefan Ward, Keith Nagel. Thank you to you and all you do, by giving up like a cup of coffee a month so you can support this show. And you too, folks, for just as little as $1 a month, you could become a Patreon supporter and, help support the show. Just go to patreon.com/black and a half, or you could go and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. That's free. Leave some comments are free. The more you leave, the freer it is, in fact. In a way you can think of it that way. So get your money's worth. And also you can check out our other podcasts that we do to help support this. You can check out my home buying podcast, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein. That's available anywhere you can get your podcasts. It's where I teach people the step-by-step process on how to buy a home. And people found it invaluable and have sent me letters and thanked me for them being able to buy a home. And they said it was because of me. I gave them the confidence. And that made, it made me teared up. It teared me up a little. It did. So you can listen to that. Or go to yourbuyingahome.com. You can, or if you want to have a really good time, you can go listen to Samantha's other podcast.
Oh, stop it. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, buy yourself a home. And in your new home, please listen to my podcast. So that one is Beyond Technique, me, Samantha Rund, where you listen to your podcast, or on YouTube if you want to listen or watch that way. And then if you are looking for a coach to help you with performance techniques, public speaking, acting, audition coaching, you know, things like that, you can reach me at beyondtechniquecoaching@gmail.com.
But that is those podcasts. And this is this one. So right now I want you to open your heart and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 198. George Tramontis, George Tramontis, and win a trip to Browntown.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by, stand by, stand by.
I like the shirt that you're wearing. That's good marketing. Are you in Seattle right now?
I am in Seattle.
So are you based here? Or
I am.
Oh, okay. Often I'll get people that were in Seattle and they tell me, oh, they were a Seattle filmmaker. But I'm like, they're in LA. Are they a Seattle filmmaker? Okay, so you're up here. You're doing your thing. So were you did some establishing shots. Were those was that Tacoma or was that Seattle?
All Seattle.
Because I was like, I didn't think I saw the Space Needle, and that's usually what I'm... Can you use a Space Needle? Are you allowed to?
I don't think there's any rule against not. It's kind of funny. We did do some shots with the Space Needle, but I kind of wanted to be the first film based in Seattle that didn't use the space needle. So, no, we shot from Alki. We did some over the water that you could see over Lake Union. And over by the UW, we shot several shots, Mount Rainier. But yeah, no Space Needle.
Oh, that's shocking. Like, how do we know? What? I wonder what else. I was like, what else would someone not in Seattle know Seattle by? I don't have any. There was a movie out recently, Kimmy, where I think the Space Needle was out in almost every shot outside to keep reminding people. It's still Seattle. Still Seattle guy. When did you film this? When was the actual shooting?
We were very fortunate, actually. We shot the last summer before the pandemic hit.
Okay.
So it's 2019. Wait, is that right?
2019? Yeah, summer of 2019 would have been.
Summer of 2019.
Okay. I was curious. I'm always curious to figure out, like, was everybody quarantined? What was going on? How did this work? So you've been editing for 2 years on this almost?
It's actually been... It's been a whole process. We are super low budget.
Right.
I like to say our shooting budget was about the cost of a new Kia car. By the time we finished, we upgraded to, like, you know, maybe a Mercedes, low end Mercedes. Okay. But
wow.
So we shot that summer, and it was actually really tricky. As you know, I starred in it, and the main character loses 50 pounds in 3 months. So in addition to holding all the hats, I had to lose 50 pounds while we were shooting. We shot weekends over 3 months.
Okay.
And, And then, yeah, the editing, we actually finished editing within probably a year later after we finished shooting. Then we did the festival circuit for the year. And that brings us to today when we're being distributed by Gravitas Ventures. And we are going to be on all streaming platforms March 22nd. So come nice. After.
That excellent. Yeah. Did. Okay. So is there a reason that you're not, it's not going to be it's not rated. Like,
yes.
Is there a reason I've just, until I started reviewing films, I think since I've been reviewing films, I've realized how many films are being released without a rating. Gravitas doesn't seem to send a lot into ratings. Is that like a big budget thing? Is that what?
There is a decent sized cost to putting a rating on it. Yeah.
That's crazy. Submitting it to the
thing. Yeah. And then it's kind of funny. Sometimes a rating can actually limit you where you're playing. Although the opposite's true as well, that certain places won't stream you, very few, but there are a few that won't without a rating. So we have this, it's built into our agreement that if I need a rating, you know, they'll go ahead and help me get it.
Okay.
But that said, you haven't seen the whole film yet, I know, but the subject matter definitely are.
Yeah.
But there's no nudity, no violence. And actually, you know, most of it's in innuendo. So it's not really super. It's only vulgar if you know what they're talking about, I guess.
See, I think I had a harder time explaining to my wife what Brown Town meant and going, and I'm like, it's called, I told her the title and she's like, what's that? And I'm like,
sorry to interrupt you. That's one of the things I enjoy about our title, actually. I would say about half the people know what it is and half the people don't. So it's kind of fun to play, you know, who knows? And usually the guys know over the ladies.
Yeah.
But it's a great film, believe it or not, to watch for married couples, I think. You should have had your wife sit down with you. It's a fun film.
I have a weird wife. She does not... she doesn't really watch movies anymore that she hasn't already seen. It stresses her out too much. Every movie. Comedies have always stressed her out more than anything. Like, the things I could sit down and watch with her, historical fiction, real stuff, like the World War II, the guy who stuttered in World War II, like that movie about him and then the king, right? And or like Lord of the Rings, like those, she's like, she can get through.
But that's like,
I tried to watch, I tried to get her to watch Death of a Funeral when it came out.
Oh, yeah.
And hands shaking the whole time because she feels so much empathy for everyone there. I think if I watched this movie, whether she'd think I was sending a hint to her of what I was like, hey, because I didn't notice when you got on the scale, I was like, that's what I'm weighing. Oh, no, I'm the before. I'm now the before. You lost 50 pounds for this.
Yes. Unfortunately, during the pandemic, I put on over half of it.
Oh, well, hey.
But I did lose. It's a good thing that pre-pandemic, I did lose that. So
did. Like, I mean, like, what a motivator, right? I mean, I was thinking about this is like, well, if you're filming over 3 months and you set it for a 3 month timeline. So if you don't lose this weight, your movie makes no sense, right? Like, you got to be losing it for each shoot. And so you must have had to shoot in chronological order, too, right?
On my scenes, yes.
Yeah. All your scenes. I was like, that's crazy. I'm like, that's what a dental. But you know what? I was like, that might not be a bad idea. Because you're putting your whole budget on the line. Then I got to lose this weight or we're going to have to spend a lot more money on post-production CGI.
Yeah. It's interesting because I did technically hold auditions for the role because I always kind of kept myself as a backup, but not many guys came out to audition for it. And also the ones that did weren't really thrilled about the idea of losing the weight. Yeah. I was like, man, this is a guaranteed diet. So just in order to make sure I'd have the film, I mean, like you mentioned, it was a great motivator for me. I don't have a film if I don't lose the weight.
Yeah. Was this always the working title? Was this always the title?
It was. Okay. I thought about some other titles, but like I said, I just like the way that it's kind of a little bit ambiguous. So
I don't know. Maybe I'm a dude, too much of a dude, so I know what it is. I was trying to think of alternative titles earlier today. I forget. I had one funny one, but that was it. The rest were dumb. Okay, you make it very clear in the beginning of this film.
Yes.
This is not about your wife. This is definitely not about her, for sure. What motivated this film for you? Was it, like, I mean, was it just the idea? Had you heard about this, or what was the...
A few things. First off, while it's not based on my wife, it's based on experiences. The character's arc, my character's arc, is based a little bit on my own experience. I went to University of Washington down here in Seattle.
Okay.
After I graduated, I got married and moved down to LA with my wife. And I was trying to be a filmmaker. I went to USC, got my film degree. And we tried it for a little while, but it was just kind of too difficult, especially, you know, being young, married, broke, and just all those things.
Yeah.
And anytime you're chasing a dream, I think people with big dreams, typically there comes a point where you have to kind of choose the direction you want. You know, does my life go this way or this way? And I knew I always wanted a family, and I knew how much I love my wife. So we decided to come back up to Seattle. Just have the family. I always kept my toe in the filmmaking business. I kept writing. I was doing a 9-to-5 job.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I came up with this idea, and this is where the less funny part comes. My mom got cancer in 2016. Okay. And, during that time I put on a lot of weight, and, you know, it was kind of a rough time. And after she passed, I really wanted to lose the weight. And I said, well, what could motivate a guy to lose a bunch of weight short of $1 million? And I came up with this funny idea. And I wasn't sure how feasible it was. And it was kind of funny. So I asked some of my married friends that I consider are normal, not warped minds like me.
Right.
And I said, is this something you think husbands ever think about? And they both went, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. And I was like, I think I have a premise for a film. So I wrote it up and showed it to my wife. And after she got over the premise of it, she really enjoyed the messages of the film and stuff. And allowed me to bring my kids into the film too. And we shot it. So
when did you tell your kids what the bet's about? Or do they know?
My kids, they're the two oldest ones, not the youngest one. The youngest one, I only have two kids.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So the youngest one I cast, I always wanted three kids. So
yeah,
I wrote myself a third kid.
Okay. That's fair enough.
But it was just before I gave it to them, I have to say, the first part, be very clear about that initial disclaimer, you know, not a real story. Okay, right. Guys. Fortunately, my kids know my sense of humor. I joke, but it's partially true. Some of their first words when they were younger was, that's inappropriate, Dad. So they're just used to it, and they knew that was the deal. And so they're equally ashamed and proud of me, which is nice.
That is the best you can hope for from children. Yeah. If you can get an equal amount, you've done something right.
Thanks.
So you went to film school. So you obviously, this is not your first film then, right?
It's my first feature.
So you've done shorts and such. Do you remember the very first film you ever shot? Like how far back does that go? Did you shoot something when you were 12 on a, I don't know, VHS, a camcorder, anything?
You know, it's kind of interesting. I was always into storytelling, and I love comic books. So I'm very much into the visual medium. But filmmaking was something, like, I messed around with video cameras, but I never really did the whole thing. And then my first real experience really shooting a story was at film school. And due to my age, I was there at USC at the tail end of the analog era. So we did everything with film.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a lot bigger of a challenge. If you've ever tried to shoot film, develop the negative, you know, cut film, it's work.
Yeah, it's expensive too, even as just for hobby, right? Yeah.
My graduate project at USC almost cost as much as this feature now. So, and it was a short film. So.
That's nuts.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not something I would say that, you know, I've been shooting films forever, but I have been thinking visually about stories forever.
Okay. When you decided to film this, I mean, now with technology, I mean, you directed, produced, did you edit or?
I don't want to take anything away from our editor, but I was heavily involved in the editing.
Well, it's very common with directors to be with that. I mean, now was it way easier than you imagined because of technology, if it's been that long since you did film school?
So as I mentioned, we're at the tail end. So I did get introduced to digital editing. It was a new thing when I left film school. So when I was leaving film school, USC had about 10 digital editing machines. And at the time, each machine was $100,000, you know, whereas now people are editing on their phones.
Yeah.
I had edited. I made other short films since then. So I've stayed up on digital editing and everything. Was it easier? Yes, way easier than shooting on film. No question about it. Was it easy? Once it was easy, but easier than film. There was still a huge learning curve to it, because as much as I knew about shooting on film, if you want it, how do I put it? Anybody can shoot something and throw it on YouTube.
Yeah.
But to make it look like it was done intentionally and lit correctly and the sound is good, it takes a lot more effort.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think what was the biggest challenge as a directing and being in it?
It was just switching that mentality of, you know, okay, is the shot set up? Is the lights correct? You know, and then switching, okay, now I have to think like the character and get into the character mode.
Mm-hmm.
I did have a friend of mine who also attended USC with me, who was one of my co-producers, Andre Tan, who thankfully stepped in and would give me some guidance when it was my turn in front of the camera.
Okay.
But that was the biggest trick. And also, even as a producer too, you know, I'm fighting all these different hats. Is like, okay, that was a good take. Do we have time for another take? You know, as a producer, are we going to make our schedule? And then as a director, you know, oh, is the performance good enough? And it was a little dizzying sometimes.
Because what, Saturday, Sunday for 3 months. So that was how many
days? 12 weekends.
12 weekends. So like a 24 day shoot.
Yeah.
No practices, right? No, or rehearsals.
The lead actress and I, we got together a handful of times before we started shooting just to kind of explore, you know, certain scenes, especially the heavily emotional scenes. So there was a little rehearsal. But for the most part, we were just actually. And then I did have once the main sets of characters, the office group and the girl group. And we ran through a couple of scenes one session just to make sure the staging and everything felt correct. So yeah, we had minimal rehearsals, but we did have some.
Okay. I'm amazed at the speed. Sometimes it's like, okay, that's a long time, but it's not, that's not obscenely long, because if you're only talking about 2 days of the week,
yeah,
there's got to be some, like, I gotta imagine there's some like jolt of like trying to get back into, like, you've been working all week and now you're filming, right? There's got to be like a, let's take like an hour or something to get back into, like, okay, I'm a filmmaker now. I'm not.
Well, the job I had at the time. So, as you know, in the film, my character's job works in IT at a university.
Yeah.
That was my job. And,
okay.
It was as kind of lackadaisical as it shows in the movie. Mm-hmm. So I was able to actually work on the film at work half the time. But it was a tough transition. But halfway through the shoot, there came a point where work was conflicting too much with the film. And so I was intending to leave the job anyways.
Yeah.
So I had to leave the job because it was also getting too crazy too.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, you, like you mentioned, you shoot, then next 5 days I'm hurrying and running around, getting everything prepared for the shoot. Next weekend shoot, same thing. So.
So does life change from here? Do you like, are you back to regular work again, or are you,
yes,
are you back to filmmaking, or
after we finished shooting, I did go back to a regular 9-to-5 at a new company, which I really enjoy, thankfully. And, but it is like having two jobs, three jobs, if you include a family,
yeah.
But, yeah, you go 9-to-5 and then you're working on the film. I mean, that's part of the reason it took so long too. The pandemic helped a little bit with that because I didn't have to travel for work. So
yeah, it's nice.
Spare time and lunch hours was easy to work on film. I don't know what's next. My whole goal was to make a feature film and make the one I wanted to make, which I got to do.
Yeah.
So if nothing else, you know, I'm happy. I do have scripts. I have scripts from previously. I was trying to get agents and managers, you know, before we made this film, but it's hard when you don't have anything to show. So now I have a feature film, I have some scripts, and we'll see what happens. But if nothing else, like I said, I like the film I made and I'm happy with that.
I don't think there's more you can ask for in this, really. If you, being happy with what you make goes a long way. What, I don't know, you do the festival, you're going to be in the Golden, what is it? The Golden Gate Festival, Golden Arches. What is it?
That was 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah. We just played at the Golden State Film Festival, which took place at the Chinese Theater in Hollywood.
Okay.
Which
was California. Really cool. Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, Golden State. That's gotta be like, where is that? Where's the Golden State?
Well, Golden Gate. Yeah. Is, you know, San Francisco.
Yeah.
It is kind of, I think they just probably, at some point you run out of film festival names. Yeah. So, but it was awesome. I mean, it was funny. I lived in LA all those years and I had never seen a film in the Chinese theater. So to return there and to get to watch your own film in the Chinese theater was mind blowing.
Yeah.
It was really
cool. Is that outward? Do they have the hands outside of there? Is that where they put
the
hands?
Yeah, that's all the cement handprints and everything. So.
Did you go put yours in just while you were there? Did you just go like?
No, I was joking. We get to put a cement butt print out there.
Oh, that's awesome. And so, are you looped in here to the Seattle Film Network at all? Then,
or
aside from this, the film, do you do other things like shorts or?
I was very looped in for a while. I taught night classes at the Seattle Film Institute for over a decade.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that was a lot of fun. I do miss teaching a little bit, actually. I enjoyed meeting people and working on it that way. I do venture out to the Northwest Film Forum. They're a great source, too. And I've taken many acting classes over the years at different places here in Seattle as well. So I'm looped in. I wouldn't say I'm like, how do I put it? I know of everybody, I think, but I wouldn't say I'm a cog in the machine of the Northwest Film Festival or Northwest area.
It's fun. Like before the pandemic, I just started finally getting around to pursuing my life goals of shooting films. Right. And so I'd done two short films and then pandemic hit. And then I did one more for the 48 hour. And then I was like, okay, I'm not doing this again until it's over. Cause it was just too uncomfortable for that. And with having hardly anybody, I thought the first 48 hour we did, we had the small crew, but once I took away all those positions to try to limit the crew and then left me to do, you know, catering and everything else, like it was like, man, this is a lot of work to be producing, directing all in just 48 hours. So I was like, nah, once this is done, then I'll go back out and do this. So, and I can't even imagine a feature. I'm only doing small stuff right now. And so like, whew.
It's interesting. Yeah, I kind of knew ahead of time, just like you said, from having made short films. It's nice if you have a partner that you can rely on 1,000%, but sometimes it's hard to find those.
Yeah.
And I just knew that, okay, if I'm going to do this, most of it's going to fall on my shoulders, and I just have to be prepared for that. Yeah. So I was aware that I was going to have to wear most of the hats and carry most of the film. So nothing exactly, the amount of work didn't surprise me, thankfully, but it did wear on me sometimes, but nothing came as a surprise.
Does it sound like a dreamboat though? Like the idea of like being able to go into something as just a director?
Oh yeah.
Just like, wait, I don't have to worry about I don't have to line produce. Just direct this thing, just interpret the script.
And make it's a funny. Film. I remember Kevin Smith joked when he made his second film, Mallrats, you know, like the first day after they were done shooting, he went and started picking up the equipment and carrying it to the cars. And they were like, you can't do that. You're not part of the union. That's not your job anymore. I mean, that's what it was like. I was cleaning up the sets. I was, you know, carrying equipment, returning equipment. It was a lot of work.
Do you think, like, is it harder now knowing more? Do you think, like, if you had done this when you first got out of college, like I sometimes think I know too much. Like I know too much how much work it takes, and that stops me from doing some things. Cause I realize like if I was just foolish enough to not realize that how much I'm going to have to do on it, I would do more.
There is, I think about that too sometimes. The blessing of not knowing,
ignorance is bliss.
Ignorance is bliss. The funny thing in this case, though, I would say is that the knowledge didn't frighten me as much as it frightened my wife, who had been around for the, like I said, my senior thesis project at USC and for other short films, I'm glad she knew how much work it would take. You know, she was never fooled at any point. And to be honest, like, you know, about 10 years after we got back from Seattle, I pitched her the idea of, oh, yeah, let's shoot something. Let's make a feature. She's like, no, you know, the kids are too little, not too much work. And, you know, then like, you know, a couple of years later, maybe, you know, I think I just finally wore it down.
That's what you got to do. It's kind of the lesson of the film, too, right? Wear them down. Is she a filmmaker as well? Or
No. But, I couldn't have made the film without her. She was my craft services. She did all the cooking and fed the entire cast and crew. She ran my errands. You know, she is my co-producer. She was there every second way. I always like to say co-producer, therapist.
Yeah, my wife cooked lunch for my first short film for everybody. She did vegan chili, which probably wouldn't have worked for your film as much. That probably would have been a little too. I feel like I'll skip that for this. The first time I have people on the show, I have 7 questions that we like to ask them, George. It's the black and a half world famous seven questions.
I've heard about these questions.
You've heard about them. They're legendary.
They are. You're the oldest comedy podcast in Seattle, probably.
Probably. That's what we say. Probably. So here's my seven questions for you.
Okay.
What are you most nerdy about?
I think you can tell from the background, it's comic book stuff. I've been a huge comic book nerd since I was, second or third grade. Uh-huh. The thing that I will pat myself on the back for, I'm not the kind who, when they see something, oh, that's out of continuity, but I'm not that nerdy. But you can quiz me on any superhero or comic book, and I can definitely answer that.
Sorry, DC or Marvel?
I've gone back and forth throughout the years. I grew up on DC Comics, mm-hmm. but they had some transitions that were rough in the last decade or so. They've gotten their act back together. In terms of movies, I will say I'm more Marvel.
Yeah, I think that's kind of have to concede that for most people. Batman, have you seen the latest Batman?
No, not yet.
Okay. Okay, number two. Okay. What's something that you love to eat?
Ice cream. I could live off ice cream if I had to.
What's the flavor? What's your go-to flavor? Are you like a connoisseur and there can't just be one?
It used to be chocolate chip mint for a long time. I've kind of gone more towards the vanilla chocolate side, so like cookies and cream, but
okay.
Chocolate chip mint's still up there.
Should it be green?
That is a good question.
I contend that it's not really mint chocolate chip if it's not green. Like, how can I? You're fooling somebody. There's no artificial. It's supposed to have artificial coloring.
I think you're correct with that. It's like drinking a Shamrock shake that's not green, Right. Although I will say Breyers does make a good mint chocolate chip that's not green. So
I will concede that, but I think gotta throw some flakes or something on it. Flakes of actual mint, All right, number three. What's something that you love to drink?
Gin and tonics.
Okay.
I would say I drank a lot of those during the pandemic. So gin and tonic is my go-to liquor drink.
That was probably a good time for a lot of people to discover what their drink of choice was, huh?
Yeah. I also like a good espresso. This one, when I graduated UW, I had two decisions. One was to try to open an espresso place, or the other one was to go into filmmaking. I graduated around the same time Starbucks was just starting up, so I'd probably be a millionaire if I went into espresso as opposed to filmmaking, but here we are.
C'est la vie. All right, number four. What kind of music do you love?
Ooh. I enjoy a wide variety of music. I particularly enjoy music you can dance to. I would say more of the rock and roll 50s, 60s era,
Okay.
Elvis and stuff.
Yeah.
Jerry Lee Lewis.
Rock around the clock.
Oh, yeah. But I also enjoy, a lot of the modern pop type songs too. So, my daughter always teases me that I have the high school or the musical taste of a high school teen girl. And I said, okay, that's fine. I enjoy it.
I love that. Okay, number five. What's a game you love to play?
I like card games. I like to play spades. I don't know if you know it's.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, spades.
I love to play spades, but we rarely have enough people to play it. My wife and I are actually big board game players.
Mm-hmm.
Not the huge ones that take 2 hours to play, but we enjoy games like Splendor, if you're familiar with that, or Azul.
Okay.
They're both kind of strategy games. usually it's just that's what we kind of do. We eat dinner after dinner, the kids go and do their thing, and we're just playing board games for a while, enjoying a gin and tonic. So.
Enjoying a gin and tonic.
There you go.
So you like playing half of a game, then fall asleep. All right. Number six, what do you love to create?
I love to create stories. I mean, like I said, that may sound generic or whatever, maybe planted, but I do. It's funny. I don't know if you ever heard this saying about writing. I don't like writing, but I love having written.
I feel that. Yeah. I haven't heard it, but I feel it.
But when it comes in terms of creating, just the idea that, you know, I was able to bring about a story. I mean, all stories kind of follow, all good stories follow kind of this pattern in terms of arcs and action and all that stuff. And when you're able to come up with an idea that works and fits and is still surprising, it's a real good feeling.
Yeah.
Other than that, I enjoy putting Legos together. So.
Okay. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
I want to be remembered as the father and grandfather of all these genius philanthropists that did all these amazing things in the world. The fact I think, I mean, I know most people want to say I'd love to be remembered for this film even.
Yeah.
But a bigger deal to me would be for somebody to be able to say, yeah, this guy put a lot of good out into the world through his family. And I'd be very happy with that.
That's sweet. I like that. Oh. All right. George Trematonis?
Yes, that's it. Good job. Okay,
good. And I can copy and paste that through the rest of the intro. thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's great to talk to somebody from the Northwest up here, too.
Yeah, that was a pleasant surprise, because that's how your publicist got me, too. It was like, Seattle filmmaker. I'm like, Seattle filmmaker? What? Oh, yeah, sure. Some of these PR people, they like to say, hey, do you want to interview so-and-so? And then they're like, I'm like, sure. And then they go, they're like, they're all filled. They're like, what? What are you asking me for? Come on. Karen always does me right, though. So she does it right. So,
oh, good.
She gets me the interviews. Thanks for coming on the show. Hopefully maybe have you on again as the film starts skyrocketing and the numbers and we see, you know.
Sure. Just a reminder. People want to find out about where they can watch the film, can visit our website at triptobrowntown.com. And as I mentioned, March 22nd, it should be available for VOD on most streaming platforms. It's available for pre-order right now on Apple TV. And
I mean, yeah. Amazon Prime, they're going to get it from Prime, right? So it's where they're going to.
They may.
Are they going to go to Vudu? Are they still around?
Oh, yeah. Vudu's still around.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
I had some in some treasure vault that had to merge with someone else because they're like, oh, we're going away. So I'm like,
no. Vudu was, I thought they were bought out by Walmart, actually.
Oh, okay.
They're kind of Walmart.
Probably saved my films. Thank goodness.
Exactly.
All my digital films. Okay, yeah. So check that out. March 22nd. Download those. And anywhere you can put in the comment section said, heard about it on Black and a Half. Do that to remind them.
Yes.
Which definitely. Which is the second trip to Brown Town. Black and a Half. Black and a Half. Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive. Live long and prosper.